Welcome to TAP. I'm so glad you are here because I am in excellent company today with hypnotherapist, spiritual counselor, and teacher and PhD, Joanne Zielinski, who is immersed in teaching others about the nature and eternal lineage of our soul and how this enriches our life experience. Welcome, Joanne.
Thank you, Manna. So it's a delight to be here. It's a delight.
It is really a delight for me too, because I've been listening to your book on or you can have it on audiobook. Of course, you can have it in print as well. It's called Awakened Soul, Discoveries of Healing, Self-Love, and Spiritual Growth. And just to clarify, this is just your recent book.
Yes. Well, I have to say, when I ended my first career in social welfare, my husband, and this was about 15 years ago, my husband said to me, so what are you going to do? Because I was in my early 50s. And I said to him, well, to be truthful, the only thing I'm interested in thinking about, reading about, and talking about is the soul. And I'm sure maybe your listeners could identify with this. He looked at me as if he had seen a ghost, and he said, And what are you going to do with that? And I honestly, at the moment, didn't know. So I love talking about our eternal journey. It's a pleasure to be invited to talk to you about our eternal journey.
Yeah, absolutely. Just from what you said there, there's different topics. I mean, even just changing career path in a later age, that's very impressive and that's very inspiring, because I know a lot of people are considering, but then maybe feeling, is it too late or what?
Well, I'll just tell you this. At a point, I was very happy in my first career, running social welfare programs and agencies. My soul had a different intention for my life, and it set in place a set of circumstances that led my first career to come to an end. So it's, you know, I do in a very serious way tell people that when we don't hear, well, when we don't pay attention to the whispers from our soul, eventually it raises its voice metaphorically. And if we really still don't get it, it sometimes creates drama in our life to get our full attention. And actually, to be truthful, that's what happened to me. Notwithstanding the fact that since decades I've been reading about our eternal nature, it wasn't the focus, if you will, of my day-to-day work, but my soul had a different plan, and here I am.
Yeah, but then I'm curious about that, because so your soul had a different plan, but was the plan to shift at that time in your 50s?
Yeah.
And not earlier?
No, correct.
Okay.
Correct. Yeah. So anyway, here I am.
Anyway, good.
About 15 years later, having, you know, while you ask that question, let me just say this, because people say to me all the time, how did you know to do what you're doing? And the truth is, I did not. If you use the analogy of a path, at any given time, I have an idea of what the next flagstone is on the path. But I have really no clarity the way I thought I did about my first career. I had no real clarity of where my path in terms of my external work, where it's meant to lead me. And once I reached that degree of acceptance that my soul knew best what I should do, I've just been, quite frankly, trying really hard to listen and follow its guidance. So for those who might be in doubt what they should do, you don't always know what 10 steps forward look like. But if you follow your inner guidance, most of us find that that's the best guidance we can get.
Yeah. Okay. I have many questions, but related to what I think we're talking about right now, there's this sentence that I noticed early on in the book around, if you feel something, this is just me paraphrasing, if you feel something is not exactly great about the situation you are in, then it's actually because your soul did not sign up for that experience this lifetime. Do we recognize this paraphrasing?
Well, I know the idea. Yes, let me say this.
Yeah.
We have our intuition. People, people call it a gut feeling. There are different expressions. Gut feeling, my intuition. I know, inside. But so many of us have been trained to just ignore that. Okay, we live in a world that's very cerebral and thought focused, and so sometimes the gap between what I think and what I feel in my gut, right? Well, the key to living in inner peace and joy is being as tuned as you can be to what that intuition is, because it's the soul whispering. Paramahansa Yogananda, one of his books is called Whispers from Eternity, and I just think it's the greatest phrase. But that's it. Our soul is whispering from eternity, day to day, hour.
And then that's one part of it, is the listening. And then the other part is that the soul has what you call a master plan.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
And so if we don't do that, then there's different consequences to it.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it's definitely related. Yeah, yeah. Well, a couple of things. Let me just say in advance. Even when we're not aware, when we're in deep sleep, our eternal self is connected to the physical self that's here in the world. We're not aware necessarily of the conversations that are going on. So I just want people to know, our souls make a plan. We, the humans, materialize. Now, without knowing what the plan is, we're left here to realize the plan. Mm-hmm. So there's this ongoing conversation, if you will, I'll use the word conversation, where the soul's constantly giving us information, both in sleep, deep sleep, when we're connected with, as well as the whispers that are day to day. Now, we're free to decide we want to ignore the plan. A lot of people don't talk about this, but we're free to decide. But here's the point. We and the soul, we're one and the same. I mean, as we talk about it, it sounds like we're two different beings, but in fact, we're not. We came here with an intention. So we can decide we don't want to follow it. But then likely, once we are back in that eternal blissful state, we'll decide we want to come back again anyway to deal with it or learn it or heal it. So just know you always have the choice. Now, having said that, the soul is quite persistent. It's brilliant and persistent. And so once it's crafted the plan and we're here to operationalize it, it wants the plan to be realized. So it keeps leading us to the path of realization of that. So I that's how I would answer it.
Yeah.
A little complicated, but that's how I'd answer it for you.
Did you say without complicating it?
Well, it is, yeah.
Because I like, I like complications. That's why.
Oh, okay. Well, it's interesting. I have a program called Soul School, and it's one of my favorite things to do. And it's so interesting because every once in a while, I have to not only remind the people who attend Soul School, but to remind myself that it's a choice. It's a choice. We've made the choice, even if on a bad day, we're pulling out our hair saying, whose idea was this?
Yeah. So the soul yearns for us to discover something.
Yes.
Right. And then when there's suffering, there's learning embedded in that suffering.
Yes.
And but the plan of the soul, is it not always to achieve healing? So, or is it more individualized than that?
Well, the way I describe it is there's several very big objectives or goals, you could call them. One is healing. Mm-hmm. One is learning. Mm. A third is bringing things into balance. I'll go back on this in a few minutes. The fourth is serving others. Actually, souls agree to plans to play roles in someone else's life plan that's really of service to them, as opposed to necessarily what they would prefer to do. And lastly, but most importantly, and is the plans are meant to cumulatively have us awaken to our divinity. Now, one has to have had a lot of lives in general to realize, to remember that you, I, whoever is a spark of divinity. And so that, but that truly is the ultimate goal of it all, is to remember we're divine, to remember we're perfect, to remember that within each of us is absolute love. And that it's a paradox. Life actually clutters our awareness of that. So when you say heal, for example, I come to heal something, it's to get it out of the way to remember that spark of divinity.
Right. Because when you remember that that you are spirit and that you have this eternal nature, then what?
Well, that's where the inner peace and joy and ultimately bliss comes.
Right.
And okay, a couple of things, even in your question, I want to go back to. People have labeled life on earth as an earth school. And there are many channels who, higher beings being channeled, who say that the earth school is, some say it's the hardest of all the planetary life systems that are available to incarnate into. But even if you say it's just one of the hardest, we make the choice to come to this really hard school because we want to learn fast. We want to heal fast. We want to awaken fast. So it's a paradox, because we volunteered actually to sign up for this really extremely difficult life. Not maybe not our own life, but to witness other people's suffering at great levels, war, famine, natural disasters.
So rather than going to Earth, the possibility would be to sit one over, as I just have that from your book, that, you know, maybe you're not, there can be souls that are not planning to incarnate for a long time, or to go to another planet. Is that the idea?
Yeah. You don't have to come back here. Mm-hmm. It's just the process of achieving those same things. You still have to learn. You still have to bring healing to whatever may have gotten messed up, if you will, to use that colloquial term, in an earlier life. You still have to bring things into balance. You might not need to serve others, but all of that anyway. So yeah, you're going to have to do that anyway. And if you choose to come here, you're actually doing it. It's like the difference between going to elementary school and going to post-secondary school.
Right. Oh, I have personal questions, but I'm like delaying gratification right now for myself. I'm trying to postpone that because I want to just stick to a few points from your book, and then I can ask a few personal questions maybe. But so,
can I just interject one thing? Mm-hmm. So I don't confuse anybody that's listening. The best way to understand soul planning mm-hmm. is to think of yourself as an author of a play. Okay. Mm-hmm. The play is your current life. You are the author. You're also the star actor or actress in that play. Surprising for some to find out, you're also the casting director. Meaning, once you decide what you want to come and achieve in a lifetime, you turn to the members of your eternal family. I call them a soul family. You can call them whatever, but there are a large pool of souls that we incarnate with time and time again. Well, as the casting director, you literally negotiate with whom ever you think will provide the best, play the best role. So once you, so if you think about it, once the play starts, the humans are playing the roles that have been set in place by you, the soul, who was the author of the play. And many of the plays are dramas. And yes, there's comedy built in, but many of the plays are dramas. So I think that's the simplest way to think about it.
I really like that image and that thought experiment. I know sort of that kind of thinking in from dream interpretation, because you're also sometimes invited when you're learning to interpret dreams to look at it as a play. And then what is the intention of that director, right? What is the producer's intention for this movie? So to do that to your own whole life narrative, that's interesting. I like that.
Yes.
Yeah. And then it's also on that point you mentioned before that some, maybe I don't know if it's all, but you're talking about souls that signed up to help,
yes,
quote unquote help, but actually help other souls, but it can seem painful. Their role,
absolutely,
can seem painful. Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. There, what we know from regressions, is that in fact, during the, what's called the planning, if you will, the planning for the life, those members of the soul family often have to be convinced. That's why I actually use the word negotiate, because some of the roles create pain and suffering. And so the choice to play the role is done out of love. But if there's an understanding that playing a role can create suffering, then it can take quite a negotiation for somebody to agree to play that role.
Right. I mean, and even to a lesser degree, what's coming to me in the moment is when I'm finding myself in relationships and I'm feeling I kind of need to say no here because I don't want to be this close to that person that she maybe wants to be to me, then that no, it's going to hurt, but it might actually be something that I signed up for. And if I don't do it, because that's also a choice, then I'm not fulfilling that role.
That's why it goes back to the intuition, because when your gut says, I need to back away from this friendship or this relationship, or I need to move on, whatever moving on is related to, a job, a life, a relationship, following your inner voice is the best thing you can do, because that's your soul who is not limited by this physicality that we're packaged in right now. And your soul understands the scope of the plan. We're here without the plan.
Yeah.
As I tell my students, we've signed the amnesia clause, and it's really,
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. So follow your inner voice.
Yeah, because you mentioned the physical body, but we're also embedded in social norms, traumas, and all these layers that makes it difficult to follow and even trust what you think is right.
Yeah, right.
Okay. So you, in the book, you go through different cases, different regressions, and I try to like think of if there are some common themes. And this, especially one I think is interesting, is that a lot of people can only feel worth if they can produce. Mm. We can only feel worth if we are human doings, because we have this conviction that value has to be earned.
Yeah.
Do you see that as a common thread in a lot of people?
Oh, my goodness. Yes. In many cultures, if you think about it, in modern times, in many cultures, we are being conditioned to produce, earn, achieve. It's particularly extreme. I live in the United States. It's particularly extreme here. It's so extreme that it's almost a part of the wrapping that people are going through life with. And the reality is when you're conditioned to see your value outside, you half the time, if not more, you're not paying attention to what the inside, your inside. And you see, that's where the external voices, you know, you grow up in a culture, in an education system, perhaps in a religious system. All of those are, if you will, think of yourself as a mannequin. And each one of those is like a layer of clothing that's been put on the mannequin. And one of them, one of the big ones in modern times, is that production and earning, you know, we become earning machines. And so all that's externalized. And as a result, it's squeezing out time and attention to our inner self, the soul.
Yeah.
Yes. And so, you know, I've had many, the logic behind that chapter is I've had so many people in their sessions who carried into this life for healing a sense of a devaluation. Now, the devaluation didn't happen in the past because they didn't earn their value. That's how it manifests in current life. It may have been because of the way they were grossly mistreated by someone in their personal, in their family. It may have been even more egregious. They may have been victimized by a political system or just one individual. And they came to hold this view of themselves as less than. Well, this is what we, the soul, do. If I've left a life with a belief that I'm less than, to use an extreme, in the book, there's a case of a woman who was in multiple lives kidnapped and held hostage and literally reduced to just being a sexual slave. And she was so badly mistreated that she formed this view that she was worthless. Well, any belief that's out of balance, I mentioned balance before, people use the word karma, but I don't use karma per se as much as balance. Mm-hmm. If I right. hold a belief as a result of being grossly mistreated because of someone else, that I'm worthless, in order, ultimately, I have to bring that belief into balance. So I have to come and heal it so that I grow to be aware of my value. Well, what better way than to struggle in a culture that is obsessed with achievement and then to reach a point where you say, this is ridiculous, right? But this is what the soul does. It makes a plan to bring up the belief it wanted to heal. It comes in a different package. So today, modern life, it's, you know, that you have a boss who tells you, why are you leaving? You haven't been here more than 10 hours. You know, somebody, right? Or a family member who says, you're a worthless slouch, right? You're getting these, right? You've actually programmed the life to bring up the same belief that you're worthless because you want to heal it and get over it. So the circumstances you've set in place in your current life are to do just that, make it be, I say, it's like so in your face, you can't ignore it. And then you say, I've had enough. You know, like you said, we started, people who say, I hate what I do. I want to do what I love, right? Yeah. There's an example. They've reached that point where they say enough is enough.
And have you not reached that point before? Was that woman not able to leave from being a held hostage before?
No. It turns out in that particular case, and I did say it was extreme, but it really makes the point so clearly. She actually, in subsequent lives, had come in to bring it to balance and healing, and it didn't go well. So now you've had a second life. And in her case, she actually had multiple lives in which she came in with a plan to heal it. And it not only didn't get healed, the belief became more extreme.
Okay.
So in her case, in this particular life, she's brought it in because she really wants to be done with it. But those of your listeners who read case histories, I know, for example, I was trained by the Michael Newton Institute, and Michael Newton, one of his books, wrote about a woman that he was working with on the issue of envy. And she had been struggling with envy in lifetimes spanning 800 years. And I remember thinking when I read it, the first time, oh my goodness. Well, but it got worse, because later when I went back through that same book, or one of Michael's other books, he had worked with another client who was working on the issue of jealousy for 4,000 years. Lifetime spanning 4,000 years. Now, the point of saying this is not to say, okay, I'm dragging one issue through every lifetime, but we humans think of things like we can snap our fingers and fix it. And there are things that actually take lifetimes to bring into balance, which is, by the way, that's the bad news. But the good news part of it is that's why we have the chance to come back to Earth and have lives and enjoy the beautiful things about life on Earth. And by the way, a lot of people who focus on the suffering forget to realize they came back here knowing there'd be suffering, but knowing there's a lot of wonderful things here on Earth to enjoy and appreciate, simple things and big things.
Mm. Yeah. So having senses is both being able to sense pain and beauty, if you will.
Absolutely.
So that's, but I'm glad you had that note actually before, because I was like, okay, 400 years, 4,000 years, I'm going to have people say, it doesn't matter if I work on it or not, because it's going to take so much time. But to just have it from a different perspective, it's just that, you know, we take our time with it.
Right. Well, number one, we need to not be so hard on ourselves. The other thing that I wrote repeatedly in the book, and that I talk about, write about, and teach about, is that we need to be loving to ourselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, part of all of this is about reaching the point of self-love. So to get to complete self-love, you have to get all these things out of the way, that you don't accept yourself, you don't think you're worth. You think you need to take care of everybody else rather than taking care of yourself. You can't forgive yourself. I say, look, eternity is what? It's forever. It's a long time. Remember that eternity is a long time. And lightheartedly, I say, so what else would you be doing? Right? We're eternal beings who decide at different points in time, oh, let me learn a new thing. Let me learn about justice. How am I going to learn about justice? Well, likely I'm going to have some experience where I feel that I was the victim of injustice.
That sounds like the fastest path. Yeah.
Right. And then in a future life, I'll probably plan to be someone who comes in to advance justice. Mm-hmm. So it's back to eternity is a very, very long time, and we have huge choice to experience existence either here on Earth, in some astral realm, heavenly realm, or in another planetary system that exists that can support life.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I did know that about the self-love, because that seems like a big one. Would you say for everyone?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Here, let me put it into the spiritual context. To be open to reach the point where one fully remembers our own divinity, we have to reach self-love. If I don't love myself, how can I recognize that within me is literally the spark of the divine source of all that is? Mm-hmm. So it's literally the impediment to experiencing the joy of the reality that we're each a divine being. We're a spark of what created it all.
Mm. Yeah.
It's like the post-PhD.
What do you mean about that?
I mean, it's the master level.
Oh, okay, right.
Master level of learning, which
right.
is why, by the way, that I think the term master is used to refer to the highest level of spiritual beings who happen to materialize on Earth at any given time. They're masters. They've reached that point of total self-love that now they're embodying the full love of the divine.
And when you do that, so because it's about remembering that we have forgotten that we are a spirit,
yes.
and then awaken this divine essence and also release the illusion of separateness,
yes.
something you speak about in the book, then can we manifest the highest version of ourselves? That's a question I have for you, that because you speak about manifesting the highest version of ourselves, does it take all of that spiritual journey in order to do that?
Let me say it this way. I think, you know, first of all, your listeners are probably interested, obviously, in the topic of past lives and
yes.
reincarnate. Even those, so I'm literally, the point I'm about to make is everyone, even those who never come into contact with any book or talk about past life regression, everyone here on the planet and elsewhere, but I'll speak about the planet, is here in the process of ultimately manifesting their divinity. Now, there are new souls here. There are some very old souls here. This is the part people, if you can factor this in, it makes watching what goes on Earth that's so painful a little easier. There's new souls here who are just learning the beginning process of manifesting their divinity. And there's others of us who are somewhere in the middle of the way. So it's an ongoing process. And because it's an ongoing process, sometimes it's slow, sometimes it's fast, right? I mean, I use another analogy about I'm here in the United States. I live on the East Coast. If I want to go to the West Coast and my friend wants to go to the West Coast, we have hundreds of ways that we can get in the car. Let's say we have a car. We can hundreds of choices of the roads to get to the same destination. Now, if I take the southern route and something distracts me, I set the pace of how I'm going to get to the West Coast. My friend, let's say her car breaks down. She's delayed. Well, in some ways, this is the same process that the soul is taking to its full manifestation.
Uh-huh.
It gets to a place and it gets bogged down. The car breaks down. Okay. Metaphor, car breaks down. Mm. Or the life falls apart. Well, it's still heading for its destination. It's heading for full manifestation. So I think that the thing about life and growing and overcoming problems and challenges is to just remember it's an eternal journey. Mm-hmm. And there's detours. And sometimes you run out of gas. And sometimes you say, I'm too tired to care, you know, and you just park yourself on the couch, right? But it's a journey and it's eternal. So you just eventually will manifest to the final destination.
Right. So in the way you describe it there, there's no real judgments that you should do this or that. There's no duty implied.
No.
Okay.
No. And in fact, we universally hear when this higher being speaks in regressions through the client, universally they say, loving and accepting things. There's no judgment. Mm. It's choices. There's no judgment. It's choices. What do you gain out of the choice? Mm. Gain a new perspective. You gain something you like, something you don't like. You gain something new out of the experience. No judgment.
Mm.
We're our harshest critics.
Mm.
We humans are our harshest critics.
But I mean, if we knew what was in store for us to put it like that, then we would all choose self-love to realize our divine essence.
Yeah. But you see, we're not in control of all the other things that everybody else does, right? Mm. So that's where that layers, the, I, you know, back to my mannequin and layers, your conditioning's a layer of clothing, all right? I said all that. Well, bad things happen in life. Well, that's like a dirty, oily rag getting thrown on your mannequin. Now, once you've got the dirty, oily rag on your pure soul that started out, this pure soul, you've got to figure out how to get the dirty, oily rag off the mannequin. And that's what life's about, solving problems, moving ahead. It's like figuring out, how am I going to get that dirty, oily rag that's overshadowing my inner light? Mm-hmm. How am I getting it out of my life?
Yeah.
So, for example, back to your bad relationships. People find themselves in really bad, caustic relationships that are eating away at their sense of self, right? That's like having an oily, dirty, oily rag on your soul, right? Because it's polluting your experience in life, your soul's expression of its inner peace and joy.
Yeah, I mean, do you speak of trauma in that context? Because in order for you to find yourself in that relationship, that, you know, you may have had some layers on that mannequin in order to just to show up in the relationship in the first place.
Absolutely. And see that, so when I use the example of the woman before, in some way, even her victimizer, she was in a relationship. Now we use that word, you know, constructively, but much of human learning, and I don't mean information. Okay. You can read a book, you can listen to a podcast, right? You can gain information, but much of what we as humans learn, we learn in relationship with another human being. Okay. So in her case, here she is kidnapped by some bad guy in more than one life who badly treats her, not as a result of her, but badly treats her. And the result is she now has this dirty rag on her called I'm worthless. Right?
Yeah.
That experience created that belief. She still has the, if you use my analogy of the dirty rag off the mannequin, she still has to get rid of it. So she's left in another life to figure out, how do I start feeling better about myself? Mm-hmm. Right.
So yeah, she would probably manifest a dysfunctional relationship.
So there was the trauma. Mm-hmm. Right. So there's the trauma.
Yeah.
And the trauma could have been in this life as well. I mean, I'm speaking a lot about the past life trauma, but the trauma could be in this life. And if the trauma is in this life, it may be in the process of just reinforcing those false beliefs about self, that I'm worthless, or whatever the belief is. Mm-hmm. See, to say it simply, what I believe, this is something for to take it to the simplest level for the listener. What I believe affects how I feel. How I feel influences what I do. What I do reinforces what, or changes ultimately what I believe. So it's this circle that we're constantly, every day, constantly are we, within us, we have many, many beliefs, and life is in the process of either reinforcing them or giving us an opportunity to change them. But the beliefs shape how I feel, and how I feel shapes how I act. You see the circle?
Yeah.
So
going from what you, from belief to feel to doing, meaning sometimes you have to go against what you, what is your normal, if you want to change something.
Yes. Well, let me say here why, by the way, the real value of past life regression therapy, not just the past life experience, in whatever trauma a person had in a prior life shaped a belief. If I brought that belief forward in my current life, I may not have any conscious awareness of it. So the beauty, the real value of how past life works is it spotlights a trauma drama. And underneath it is the belief that was formed. Now, once we get the actual belief in that insight in the session, each of us is still left in our life moving forward of having to change the belief.
Yeah.
So for example, this woman that I mentioned in this extreme example, she still, once she got to the origin of why she thought she thinks she was worthless, she still now has to make choices in her current life to reinforce that she has tremendous value, right? So that's the belief itself is where we start. And by the way, that's the obviously why people go into counseling and therapy, is they're trying to get to the bottom of what, why they're stuck, whether it's a relationship or how they think or how they feel. They're trying to get to the bottom of it so that they can make a change.
Yeah.
And have a different outcome.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with past life regression. You just have an opportunity to get to the belief faster.
That sounds for me comparable to astrology, because that's where you have that overview and you can pinpoint the themes, but then there's the work and usually
yes,
it involves
absolutely.
Therapy.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, so I'm aware of time and I really wanted to ask you a personal question, because you did say something about also suicide, suicidality in your book. And I feel that it's only been a few years where I'm not counting it, but it feels like a few years where I've had access to real aliveness inside of me, because I have periodically, but still most of my life been struggling with feelings of wanting to kill myself. And the reason why I'm asking you about this is because from a past life perspective, this can be quite interesting to, is it just that, you know, it's just due to trauma and this is the layers on top of the mannequin? Could there be something about not wanting to incarnate in the first place? Just what do you think about suicidality when you work with that?
Okay, it's very complicated. Let me say this. Well, many things. First, I have found, I actually, in my preparation for a session, when I prepare somebody for a session, I go through a number of things that I found to be so common when people have past lives that I say, these are the things that you could pop up like toast out of the trance, okay? And one of the things that's on that list is suicide from prior lives. Okay. Now, I have found it's quite common. A lot of people find out that they have killed themselves in a past life. Mm-hmm. And I have also bore witness to the fact that at the time that they made that choice, it clearly was to them the best choice. All right. So having said that, I have. Now, again, it's my client population. I'm not in any way saying this is a universal.
I appreciate the point, though. I appreciate it.
Okay. So yeah. This is one. Now, this is the way. Number two, it's hard to talk about suicide without acknowledging that what any one person thinks about it has a lot to do with their family, cultural, and religious upbringing. Okay. It's like we've absorbed somebody's opinion about suicide. All right. So I'm just putting that out there. Like it's there now, but now I want to talk about, so here's the thing. If I put in place a plan and I want in my soul plan to accomplish four things, and maybe they're really hard things, and my guides have tried to tell me, you know, that's a little too much, but I'm like, let's say I'm stubborn. And let's say I'm really, and I have a good example later I'll get. And let's say I really want to hurry up and accomplish, right? And so I ignore their advice and I come here with this really hard plan. Okay, so my plan has four big components. All right, so I start out my life and I manage to accomplish achieving component one. Oh, there was a lot of suffering, right? But I got it. Now I'm on component two and same thing. There was a lot more suffering now, but this is like a little pyramid because accomplishing two was predicated on having accomplished one, right? It's like growth. I grew through one, then I grew through two. Now I'm on number three and it's killing me metaphorically. Mm-hmm. I'm just tired. I'm exhausted. I don't think I have the energy to be bothered. And I decide I'm going to leave. Now, this is the big thing people have to remember. It was their plan to begin with. No, and what I mean is, whatever number four was, that was the plan. One, two, and three were predicates to coming to do number four.
Okay, yeah.
Right? That, not the plan to, right, for it to be havoc. But anyway, well, if number four really matters to the soul, at some future point, it's going to have to come back. If it matters, if it's something that soul needs to or wants to achieve, at some point in eternity, it will have to find a way to achieve it. Now, including not coming back here, but working on it in the astral realms or some other world. Now, so let's use an analogy. So I managed to get to, in the United States, high school is 4 years. So you go through elementary school and then you go to high school. But if my goal is to go to college, but by the time I get to my junior year in high school, I drop out. If going to college and getting a college degree, to use this analogy, is something I want, I'm going to have to start over. Oh. Right?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So now, but not to minimize what other people have taught us about suicide, but from the soul's perspective, it's a decision to end the plan.
And having to do it all over is what you're saying?
If what was intended to be accomplished. Now, perhaps the soul's plan was to come in, and this is hard for people to hear, this kind of thing. And by taking its own life, it was actually providing a service to others.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
In the trauma that the others experience as a result of the loss of the person, perhaps when I say service, the service piece is really hard for people to understand because it sometimes involves great sacrifice.
Yeah.
You know, the soul that agrees to come into a fetus to be stillborn, a soul made that choice, that it had the time and it was available. So this goes back to when I say the negotiations. Mm-hmm. Let's say you have a plan and you have a person in your soul family that you think is the best to play a certain role. And you try to negotiate for them and they say, well, I'd love to do it, but no kidding, I already have a plan. Just it's like in real life. I have a plan. I can't go with you here. I have a plan. I'm doing something else. But let's say a soul says, well, I have a little bit of time. I could play a short role. I mean, people have a hard time accepting this. And this is, you know.
It makes a lot of sense. To me, it makes a lot of sense because then what you're saying is then you would have that stillborn baby. And of course, you would be incredible suffering from it, but then you would also grow from it. And if that's what you've signed up for, this
yes,
growth
absolutely.
From loss, then that's right. A service. Yeah.
Right. Because we see the thing about the past life work has taught me is all I'd say almost universally, humans have a perspective that life, their current life, is the most important thing. But in fact, my current life is an immersion experience I signed up for. My eternal home, if you will, that word is used by a lot of people. My eternal home is not here. I've signed up for, I call it an immersion experience because it's a lot of learning going on here, right? A lot of pain, a lot of suffering, a lot of learning. It's a temporary thing. I'm going to go back to my eternal state and likely, because I love Earth, sign up for another immersion experience in the next century or later in this one, right? Okay. Well, I can sign up for a very short time here. If my signing, like, think about the people have a hard time with this. Think about, you know, children who die of cancer. Their soul agreed to come in for that experience, not necessarily for the growth and learning for itself, but for the service that that circumstance creates for other people.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I'm really feeling into it. I hope the listeners are as well, feeling into what possible plans my soul would have. For me to learn, because I think one thing where you could choose suicide and the plan has not been fulfilled is that if the plan was to get beyond victimhood.
Yes, right. Yes. Well, and the case in the book that really makes this is I have a client. Now this, because this will show you the other side of it. All right. Okay, so I had a client who has done a lot of regressions anyway. And somewhere along the line, she formed a belief that life was too hard to cope with. Hmm. It's a belief. And she chose in that life to kill herself. Okay, well, the belief, see, this isn't, the belief is out of balance. The belief itself is out of balance, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Life's too hard to cope with. Well, a more accurate belief is, life is hard to cope with, but it's not impossible to cope with. So in order to get that belief in balanced, said another way, she had to plan another life to try to get it in balance. Now, in her case, she had a couple of lives where her reaction to how hard it was to think about killing herself. And in two of them, her beloved basically rescued her. Okay. But she comes into this life now as a soul, convinced, though, among other things, that she has to learn that it's not, that she has to balance it. Okay. So mm-hmm. I'm stumbling over my words. Mm-hmm. Here's what she plans. She comes into a life in which she, at 10 years old, learns that her father's sexually assaulting her sister.
Okay.
And she, at 10, courageously blows the whistle.
Okay.
And tells the family.
Wow.
And then they act like she's the problem.
Of course.
And then it gets worse because her father had a drinking problem. Mm. And as a result, he was caught in his own problem of drinking. Mm. And he subsequently committed suicide. Now the family's really blaming her. So at a young age, she's thinking about leaving because she can't handle it. Okay. She successfully gets herself through that. She's living. Now she's a young adult. She falls in love. She thinks she's met the man of her dreams. And then she finds out, well, she's just one of a whole handful of women that he's stringing along who think he's the man of their dreams. Mm. And she goes through the second in a very short life. She's only like 20 at this point. Now she's devastated again emotionally. And she thinks, I'm going to kill myself. Mm. Right. But her soul came here. The plan was to come and get that belief into balance, mm-hmm. to no longer assume that she was not strong enough to handle it.
Right.
So
yeah, yeah.
here. We are 10 years later. Now she's in another crisis, more than 10 years. Having lived with somebody for 8 years, she finally thinks it's safe enough to get married. She introduces the topic. He says, I'm out of here. And she's devastated.
Yeah.
Okay. Once again, she's faced with, but now she's already taught herself life is worth living.
Yeah.
She planned a life that has enough joy in it that each time she got to the point where her mind said, I'm out of here, her soul said, no, there's joy and peace to be found. And I'm happy to tell you, she's now about 48 and no longer has suicidal thoughts when life gets tough.
Oh, that's great. I can really find myself in that, in that story. And yeah, because that's growth, right? And oh, okay,
yes,
now,
absolutely.
Next time you're down.
For one thing to just say, interestingly, when people think about what they plan for a life, that may be the one and only thing that the soul planned for the life. Mm-hmm. For the person to come in and remain here to convince themselves that life can be coped with,
mm-hmm.
that life is worth living. It's a gift. So maybe nothing else needs to be done except that one thing.
Okay, I'm going to shift a little bit to astrology, but just my moment of going there, I'm going to say something that I think, because of your astrology, that you may recognize that for me, that's absolutely not the only thing. For me, there's a strong internal, I'm going to call it pressure, but not in a negative sense, but like an internal, I don't have another word than pressure, of I need to get this out into the world. This is so important to leave this mark before I die. And I'm sure you recognize that, right?
Yeah.
Don't you?
Yeah, well, driven by mission,
yeah.
If that's right. Yes. Oh, sure.
Right.
You know, I have to tell you,
mm-hmm.
I'm driven by mission, but I also, in my own spiritual growth, have learned, and through hearing it from the spirit guide so many times, telling my clients, you're here to find inner peace and joy.
Mm, yeah.
And so even for those who are so mission oriented, it's not to be at the exclusion of cheating ourselves of peace and inner joy.
Okay, I hear you. Yeah, that's really important that you say that. Yeah, because that internal engine or fire, because it is the fire element that I'm speaking about, that can make you ignore so many of your own and emotional needs, perhaps, if you're so driven. So yeah, I hear you. Yeah.
Yes, I'm laughing because it couldn't be more true.
Yeah.
For me. That's
yeah.
Right.
And you have
right.
So much fire in your chart. And Joanne, so I wanted to ask you, how has your life been almost? But like, when we look at a chart like that, we see like this powerful woman, very independent woman, but because of the age you were born in, that is, I mean, it's still a thing, but especially in earlier times, it was definitely not expected for women to have to be strong and to be masculine in that sense. Mm-hmm. So how have your experiences with that been? First, can you recognize it? And how has it been you to break the norms in terms of that? Yeah.
All right. Well, that's why I'm laughing, because I recognize it. I live it every day. Okay. Let me say a couple of things. My favorite word, and it's a word a lot of people don't even have never even heard. It's iconoclast. And I remember the first time I heard it, the definition is basically somebody who moves to their own drummer. And I've always felt that about myself, even as I was young. I never had to fit in. I never had to wear what was trendy, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, million examples. I will say when I was a young woman, my friends would make fun of me because I was very aware. It was at the time when the women's movement, the contemporary women's movement, was really gaining steam. And anyway, so I have been an outlier, but I find you know, again, it goes back to knowing your inner compass. You just have to be true to yourself. But even in saying that, let me tell you that when my first real past life regression, I was brought to a light. This is so fascinating because I'd be talking about power to people, women. We have to empower ourselves, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And one of my friends one day said, Joanne, I'm so sick of you hearing you say, let's like carry our personal power. Anyway, so here I am externally. Now, this is an interesting because it tells you how we work, even our souls working. Here I am externally talking about power. My first past life regression, I went to a life in which I was a woman in caveman times, being held captive in a cave and victimized. And I didn't think I could escape. I thought if I tried to escape, I would be killed. So it was fascinating to me because what it brought to mind is even though I thought I was comfortable carrying personal power, I obviously had even my own residual trauma about being powerful. So,
wow.
Right? So yes. I come in at the moment in time astrologically that I'm this, as one astrologer told me one time, Joanne, you don't realize you're a force of nature to be dealt with. And I was like, what do you mean?
Yes. Absolutely. Yes. Yeah, exactly. And because the thing that I said about, yeah, the thing I said before could be said with women, especially with this solar masculine, where you have a lot of fire in your chart. But the story you just gave us from being in a cave and then that creating fear of your own power is definitely due to that it's actually the south node you have in sounds and signs and configurations of power. I'm trying not to be too specific because I found that people can misunderstand when I just say just bits and pieces, but because, you know, astrology is it's a synthesis anyway. But so there's definitely, you actually come in with a lot of power, but it's also, there's also a fear attached to it. It's the archetype of Scorpio. It's like both you want it and you're also
to really make the point, I'll tell the listeners this as quickly as I can if we're running out of time. So in the last roughly 5 years, I've learned that someone who in this life betrayed me very badly has killed me in three prior lives.
No. Okay.
All right. And oddly, this is going to sound like it has nothing to do with it, but oddly, it had to do with my role as a spiritual teacher in earlier lives. Mm. So at the point I made this career transition to this work, I found myself at points doubting who was I to talk to people about their eternal journey, right? In fact, I went and got multiple additional degrees to justify my position to talk about the soul, right? Mm-hmm. Well, in fact, what I learned is that those past lives had left me doubting the power I had to speak to people about their eternal soul.
Right.
So it's so interesting that you point that out because that's some of the big dramas that I've learned about that connect absolutely to my current life and things I've been working to bring to balance to in my current life.
Wow. And playing into that is always structural conditions, right? The culturally norms on top of your own personal journey, right?
Right.
That first thing is, what do you expect from women? And second is just, I guess anywhere, I don't know, in Western culture anyway, it's not so, it's easier to get a job with no spiritual content, to put it like that.
Right. Well, the other thing to amplify your last sentences, I picked being alive at this time in this world, right? I selected a part of the world where I actually could be free to bring this power thing into better balance.
Right.
Now, I joke, it's not funny, but I could have been, if I was born in some other places right now, I might be killed for being trying to be the woman I'm in the process of being right now.
Yeah.
So something else people don't think about. We actually pick where we're going to incarnate because it provides the cultural, education, religious circumstances for us to achieve what we want to achieve as a soul.
And to achieve that balance. I really like that word or that term that you gave me, the balance, to just replace the word karma that has so much associated to it. And just say balance.
It's not about retribution or punishment. It's about just, you know, it's about seeing it or experiencing it from the other side to bring it into balance.
Okay, so Joanne, normally in the end of a conversation, I take a screenshot, but but I usually take a screenshot, but can you?
We can do that another day.
We'll do that another day because you just had an eye operation, so I'll free you from that. But I just wanted to say to the listeners, so they know that my ritual is intact. But do you have anything just here in the end to that you feel like this is really important that you get these points across to people?
Yes, we've hit on it already. But the two things is, number one, whatever baggage, garbage, whatever you want to call it, is in your way of loving yourself. Direct your time and attention to getting it out of the way. Loving yourself is so important. And the other thing is to never forget that you're a divine, you're a spark of the divine. And that's in every one of us, every one of us. And the clutter of human life precludes us remembering that all the time, but that's actually the most important thing I could tell you to people is we each are divine. We're a spark of the divine, and we're here to get closer and closer to the bliss of the full awareness and the full awakening of that.
Oh, it's so good, Joanne. Thank you so much for being so generous. I feel I have several points that I'm gonna work with on my own time, especially that play that you mentioned in the beginning. That's a really good metaphor. I'm gonna use that it would be a good meditation, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Mana. It was a delight, and thanks for giving me the opportunity to talk about my favorite topic with such sincerity with your questions. Thank you.
Yeah.